Good evening and welcome to Italian Impact Weekly. I'm your co-host Steve Stefano Mancini.
And my name is Claudio Relsano, and we have a very special show today. A dear friend of mine, somebody who I studied back when I was just out of high school a little bit, and watched him coach, watch what he did. Not so much the X's and O's, but just him and how he handled his players. And, yeah, some X and O's too, even though he was a basketball coach. He was also a guidance counselor at Northgate High School. And we will get into his entire coaching career. But he also led the Quaker Valley High School team the 1988-89 season with a 24-5 record, won the section, the 13AA section. They advanced to the WPIL semifinals and the PIAA quarterfinals. He's won numerous awards. He's also an inductee into the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame here in Pittsburgh. Well-deserved honor. He's also an original board member of the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame in Pittsburgh. And again, someone who means a ton to me, and that's Coach John Gattano. Coach, thank you so much for being on our show.
My pleasure, Claudio. Anytime at all.
All right. Well, you know what, Coach? We always like to start off with where, before we ask where you're from here in Pittsburgh, where is your family from in Italy?
My mother and father came over from Italy. They lived in Calabria, and there was a small town in Calabria called Cittadella, and they moved over here, and just like all the Italian immigrants came over, they went to Ellis Island, and then they moved to Swickley, and they lived in Swickley for a while, and then my family moved up to the Hill District in Pittsburgh, and then we moved to Mount Washington, which is where I was born, in the Hill District. Mm-hmm. And I moved up to Mount Washington when I was in fifth grade, and finished my living there until I left for college and got married.
Now, as you know, like for your example, Swickley, you mentioned Cittadella. There's a lot of people from Cittadella who moved to Swickley, and people from my dad's hometown of Falerno who moved to Swickley. Not so many from where my mom's from in Calabria Nocera, but I think the way it was they would move here and say, hey, it's a great area and there's work here, not too far from the city, you can take a bus. And then they flocked here because somebody knew something about the area. Is that the way it was for your parents as well?
Exactly. I had an uncle there that owned a restaurant in Swickley.
Which restaurant was that?
You know what? It was. It's Romano. What's the name? Romano's now. I can't remember the name of it now. But he owned the place there, and it was funny that you remember who John, the guy that had was the bus manager, Vaccaro.
Oh, sure, Mr. Vaccaro, yeah.
John was a resident there for a very long time, and when he found out, after talking to me, that was my uncle that had that restaurant, he said, you know, your uncle was a little bit crazy. I said, well, I guess he was. I said, I was rather young and didn't know. But he did own a restaurant and bar in Swickley, and I can't remember where it was.
I bet you it was on Walnut Street.
Yes, it was.
Okay, because it was that was the strip. And remember, Chuck Knox used to talk about all those restaurants because the Menitzas had a bar there, and that whole strip was bars and restaurants. And Chuck lived on Walnut Street next to where Saffron's is now. And my dad lived there when he was a little bit older.
Yeah, well, it's kind of ironical that I wound up at Quaker Valley and finished my career at Quaker Valley. I wasn't aware of the fact. I knew my family lived in Swickley for a while, but I wasn't aware of the fact that my uncle had the bar and restaurant there, and it was, you know, just like kind of deja vu coming there, and
sure.
And my career ended there, and his career ended there also.
Yeah. Now, were you raised with, I guess, I don't know if that's the proper term, with the Italian mindset, but with the traditions and the pride in being Italian, loving the country here, obviously, but still let's not forget where we're from in Italy. Were you raised with that?
Exactly those words, with the exception of one thing. My parents would not allow me to learn Italian.
Mm.
They wanted me and my brother to be American, mm-hmm. and we were not, you know, we would have loved to have learned to speak the language, but they wanted us to be American children, and so they didn't teach us how to speak Italian, even though they spoke Italian fluently.
Right.
We were never taught how to speak it.
Huh.
John, the irony in that is if you look at nowadays and you see commercials in multiple languages, primarily Spanish, because there's such an influx of Spanish. You know, 80, 100 years ago, there was an influx of Europeans. But, you know, the differences back then when folks immigrated to America, they were coming to be Americans. They were going to give it up. Right. And I think the problem now is that now you have a segment that has lost the connection between, you know, the old country and America. And now the immigrants today, they don't give it up. In fact, they sort of mandate that you change. I'll be very blunt. They change. We have to change for them. So, you know, instead of saying, hey, listen, if you come here, you know, everybody gets flustered with the, you know, you should learn English. You know, why don't you learn English? And, you know, I respect cultures. Obviously, we do this show, and I'm a big proponent of, you know, always maintain your culture. It's who you are. But at the same time, that doesn't mean you can't be a good American. When you look back, you know, you're, you know, basically, depending how you look at it, you're either a first or a zero generation because, you know, you were born here and your parents weren't born here. And you see these kind of changes, especially with even modern Italian immigrants. What do you think is the biggest, like, you know, putting the language piece aside, because you're not the only one that's had that issue. There are a lot of Italians that basically gave up a lot of their culture because they said, nope, we're going to be Americans. But what would you say are some of the biggest things that if you could go back in time and say, don't lose this, what would it be?
What we have lost, and it is my generation that has done this, we have lost traditions. The traditions that the Italian families had for holidays, for Sunday dinner, for just things that were so family oriented, and those traditions have gone away. I can remember when I was married, and no matter if I was sick, I was dying, don't miss Sunday dinner at my parents' house. That's the way it was. Thanksgiving, the whole family was together. There had to be 20 people sitting at the dinner table and 20 different people talking except the children. I don't know how anybody understood anybody, but we had the dinner of the seven fishes. We had all the traditions that were there, and they kept the family close. And then my generation, we started moving to different parts of the city. And when my mother died, her sisters died, because the Italian women were the strength of the family, believe it or not, those traditions went away. And those are the things I miss more than anything right now.
No, you know, I'll tell you, it's funny because you guys were talking about different restaurants and bars. And, you know, I grew up in Bloomfield, and almost all the old places are gone. And
yes,
it's so sad because it's like if people knew what these people did to come here and make a business. And I don't know if the kids just cash out. They just don't care. They don't appreciate it. I just don't want to run a restaurant, you know, for a myriad of reasons. But all those places just, they fade away. And then they get bought out. Then they become, you know, something absolutely just benign. You know, when you look back at that, talk about the changes, you know. When you look back and you think back and you see it now, you know, how does that make you feel? Like, you feel like, you know, God, we got to get this back before it's all gone. I mean, do you ever think about that kind of stuff?
I can remember, believe it or not, going to Mount Washington at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night to get a pizza at Del's. They had the best pizza that you could buy in Pittsburgh. Right now, I belong to the Exercise Warehouse. Mark Mackey owns the place. And he tries to keep traditions there. It's just very difficult. People have moved. Our whole society has moved away from that. And, the family unit used to be the strength of our country. And that's not the same. I looked at these kinds of things that are happening in schools. I was a teacher and a guidance counselor for 37 years in the schools, and I watched how things changed. I'm going to sound like an old man, but that's just what I am, that when you got in trouble in school, don't go home, because you were in more trouble at home than you were at school. The teacher was right. There was no discussion whether the teacher was right or wrong. Now that has totally reversed itself, and teachers, police officers, all people of authority no longer have that authority. And I believe that that's the trouble that we're in right now. And my perspective now at my age allows me to see things like this. And frankly, I'm afraid for my grandchildren, because what we think is abnormal is their normal.
Right. That's
kind of scary.
Coach, you said, first of all, you're not an old man. You're in great shape. But I know what you're saying, because I say the same thing. I say, I sound like an old man, but this, that, and the other thing. But really, the phrase old school, it's not so much old school. It's the right school.
Right.
Being respectful, not mouthing off to people, as corny as it may sound, but, do unto others, be kind. I see the way kids behave with their parents. My parents adored me and I adored them. But if I would have ever said something negative to my mom or dad, or hit my mom like you see out there, or treat my parents in a disrespectful way, it wouldn't have lasted too long. Why did things go to the other side?
One of the things I think that has changed things considerably, in my opinion, is the media.
I agree.
The media has made things that should not be out there. The negativity, the things that shouldn't be done that are being made big, rather than the little things that are important, are not done at all. I see an example. When I was teaching, that the little thing was a bomb threat. Okay, now you emptied the school. We checked the school out. We found out there wasn't any. If we were lucky enough, we were able to trace the call to catch the person that did it. That does not need to be publicized.
Right.
Because if it gets one kid hears about it, oh boy, that's a good idea. I'm going to do the same thing. We'll get a day off of school. The media has really not. The media does a great job. Don't misunderstand me, but too much negativity, too many things that don't need to be sensationalized, are sensationalized now. The violence that goes on. Mm-hmm. And somebody sees somebody that goes in and does something. Shoots people in a school. That's okay. Let me do that. And those things they multiply. I feel that's a big issue. I think that if we're going to do things, let's talk about the good stuff.
Right.
And be positive.
There are people who try to do that. And what the honest to God truth is? They don't get the coverage.
Right. That's exactly right. I agree. And people want to hear negativity instead of hearing the good things that happened. You're absolutely correct. I can remember in coaching, and I am not going to mention any more than what the incident about it was. I had, and I was your first year head coach, and it's pretty intimidating if you're trying to do the job correctly. And I was interviewed about a victory that I had against a school that we had no right beating. And, how do you feel about it? And, how does a kid feel about Christmas morning when they're opening gifts? And I said something stupid that I'm not going to report. Don't you know everything that I said positive never hit the paper. Well, and this is what he said. And that was, I should never have said it, but I did. Well, the next morning, the superintendent and the principal come in and say, what are you doing, man, making a statement like that? So it's a two-way thing, and we have to get back to being positive about everything. I see what's happening, and I certainly won't get involved in the politics of what's happening. You know, how about going in when you're running for an office, telling you what I'm going to do to try to make my area better, rather than criticizing the person that you're running against and trying to find dirt about them? You know, that's we're in that era, and that needs to change.
Well, I would stay one step further. And I think the truth is that people have just ever gotten out of the schoolyard crap, the little 12-year-old gossip. People aren't growing up. It's a question of immaturity. To your point, I'd rather hear something dirty about my opponent than tell me what you're going to do that's going to help me. I mean, that's literally what's become. And by the way, you said something else was kind of important. You know, you said the Italian women were the strength of the household. That's another thing. You know, society sort of frowns. You know, if a woman wants to stay home and be a homemaker, it's like, ugh, you know, like it's a negative. It's like, you know, there's a lot of power to run a home, and it takes a lot to run a home. It's not like that's an easy job, you know what I mean? But yet society looks down upon that, you know. But yet, if you know, to be very blunt, but if a man wants to stay home and, you know, and send his wife to work, it's no big deal. I mean, to your point, it's so upside down. It's like, why can't we celebrate if a woman wants to, you know, but be a mother and stay home and raise her kids? Instead, society has just turned that on its head and said, you know, that's so old-fashioned. You know, the truth of the matter is for thousands of years, humanity's only grown because of what was old-fashioned. Now we're at this absolute mess of morals, and, you know, we're on the brink of, you know, another catastrophic war because people are just lost their minds. And right. Then and to your point, we're going to tell me that this can't be fixed. It could easily be fixed. We just choose not to fix it. Again, and it starts at just look at who our officials are. They are a representative of us. People want to complain about politics? Look in the mirror, I tell them. Look in the mirror. First of all, did you even vote? And second of all, who did you vote for? And why did you vote for them? And if the answer is, well, because the other guy, well, then you voted for the wrong reason. You know? So.
Right. And you're right. What happens is, and this is, you talk to many people, and I don't, but I know that what they believe is when they're in a race, and we're going to be having a presidential race coming up next year. And are you voting for who you think is the best candidate, or are you voting for the one that might cause the less damage over a 4-year period of time? Are you voting for the lesser of two evils, rather than voting for the best person that is running for that position? And I just use that one because we're having that election coming up. But that comes down to just about every election.
Right.
You know?
Lately,
I mean,
I'd say the last 20 or 30 years, it's really been who do you hate the least?
Yes. Yes. Who can do the least amount of damage in a period of time?
I don't even think they care about the damage. I don't even think it's the damage. Because I'm going to be honest with you. There have been, I won't get political, but there have been some presidents over, I'll say, the last 20 years that have not very really done a good job, but they were liked. And right. Said, oh, he's a good president. He's nice. He speaks well, whatever. But they didn't do a good job. And so we've turned, again, it's back to that. We're acting like we're 12-year-olds in the schoolyard, and it's a popularity contest. Or I hate so-and-so, so I'm going to vote for this person. And it's like the country is almost becoming more childish in its thought process.
And I can tell you, And you know, this is maybe why Claudio kind of taken a liking to what I did when I went to Quaker Valley, because that's when I met him there. My job as a basketball coach was to be a coach, but that basketball court was my classroom. I was a teacher.
Right.
I was molding young people, not just for basketball, but to get ready for life. You know, we had rules. And if you violated the rule, there were consequences. If you did something positive, there was reward. we learned that if you want to be successful, the harder you work, the luckier you got. We spend more time on little fundamental things, like getting over a screen, like coming out with the correct foot to guard somebody, to keep your spacing on defense. We worked on shooting to make sure that your elbow was in. One of the things that I did that used to drive my kids crazy, they watched the NBA players and they watched the college players, and one of the things that bothered me was foul shooting. And my mantra was, you're 15 feet away with nobody on you, and whether you know it or not, you could fit two balls in that hole at the same time. And I showed them that. I took a rim down, and I put two balls in there. So what we did, what they did was this. They felt that you get the ball, you spin it in your hand about three or four times, you bounce it again, spin it, and shoot it, and miss. Okay? So I changed that. If you played for me, when you got on the foul line, whether you knew it or not, and I can go into some real detail on that, there is a nail right in the middle of the foul line. And that nail goes to another nail at the other end of the foul line, and that's how they line the courts. That nail is right in the middle of the hoop. So if you're left-handed, your right foot goes on there. If you're right-handed, your left foot goes on there. And what you do is you get three bounces, one, two, three. You're supposed to keep your elbow so that it's almost going down to your thigh, and you bring it straight up. When you miss, if you miss, you're going to miss long, you're going to miss short, because your elbow isn't out and your elbow isn't in. My kid shot 80% from the foul line, but we shot 50 fouls every day the right way. And those are the things that I felt that were so important in coaching. And whether we had a winning season or had a losing season, the kids got better. They got better as being people, and they got better as basketball players. And, you know, that was the secret to 30 years of coaching.
Coach, before we go on a break and talk about your coaching career, I have to ask you this. I think I know the answer. Your thoughts on when Travis Kelce pushed Andy Reid during the Super Bowl?
It's unnecessary. Okay, it's outside the rules. You know, but it was still made something that was, you know, how big of a thing was it that you just blow it the way it was blown? You know, when you're talking about violent men playing a violent game, and unless you've been in that seat. And you really don't have much of an opinion, and they are going to make bad judgments sometimes. And unless you've been in the heat of the battle, you know, was it right? No. But again, that got picked up and I thought blown out of proportion.
All right, folks, we'll be right back after these messages.
Remember, you can hear all of our shows on www.italianimpactweekly.com and www.crsmedia.com, and hear such great guests as Coach John Gattano, Mario Andretti, Vince Ferragamo, Vince Papali, Chris Corciani, as well as many successful businessmen and women in the Italian community. If you're looking to promote your business, please connect with us at questions@italianimpactweekly.com. Not only can we air your commercials, but we can produce one for you as well. We promise to give you as much publicity as we possibly can at a great price. Don't forget about my show, the Claudio Relsano Show. I've had such great guests as Rocky Blyer, Jim Rooker, Sid Bream, Dick Vermeil, Ken Griffey Sr., Robin Cole, Mario Andretti, Vinny Pazienza. It's a great show, and we're kind of switching formats a little bit. We're also going to talk more business and life content with successful men and women in the business world. Also, don't forget about my book, Lead from the Heart Up, Not the Neck Up, How to Create a Positive Winning Culture on the Field and in the Office. You can still get that at the Barnes & Noble in Robinson Township and order it on Amazon.com, BarnesNoble.com, and Claudio Relsano. And I cannot forget about our TV show, The Boxing Authorities, Boxing's Best TV Show with Luther Dupree Jr., Smokin' Joe Frazier, and myself. Now you can check us out on KeepBoxingFree.com, as well as VIVETV.network. And we've had such great guests as Jerry Cooney, Donnie Lawn, Vinny Pazienza, Mike Weaver, Jimmy Birchfield, a lot of great guests on that show. And don't forget, May 18th, 9 a.m., shotgun start at Tam O'Shanter Golf Course. It'll be Let's Partee for KC Golf Event, hosted by Kennedy Catholic Family of Schools. Tam O'Shanter is located at 2961 South Hermitage Road in Hermitage, Pennsylvania. Only $125 per player. Please contact Maria Metters at 330-559-8891. 330-559-8891. It's a great event. I will definitely be there for sure, and I hope to see you there.
Thanks to Greater Pittsburgh Travel. For any of your travel needs, let Tom and the team at Greater Pittsburgh Travel know, and they'll take care of you. For more information, call 412-331-2244 or visit their website at www.greaterpittsburghtravel.com. For all of your plumbing needs, be sure to try Pollucci Plumbing. Nick and the team have decades of experience and will get you back up and running. For more information, call Pollucci Plumbing at 412-782-5050. And we want to thank the Calabria Club of Pittsburgh. If you're interested in learning more, you can find their contact information on Facebook at Calabria Club of Pittsburgh. Again, thanks Domenica and the team at the Calabria Club of Pittsburgh for your support. And we want to thank La Scuola d'Italia Galileo Galilei, the only nonprofit school in Pittsburgh endorsed by the Italian Consulate. If you're interested in learning Italian, or have your children being immersed in the Italian culture and language, be sure to give them a call at 412-404-7070. And that's La Scuola d'Italia Galileo Galilei. We'd also like to thank Chris Gonzalez from the Knights of Columbus. If you have any questions about joining the Knights of Columbus, reach out to Chris Gonzalez at 412-605-9074. All right, welcome back. Claudia, we got a great guest on us. Let's pick it up with your favorite topic, which is coaching in sports.
Yes. All right, Coach. Now, I know you were a good baseball player, good basketball player, good athlete, but when did the coaching bug hit you?
well, the truth be known, Claudio, again, being part of an Italian family, the year before I went to college, we didn't have enough money for me to go, so I got a job at J&L Steel. And I made so much money at J&L Steel, I said to my parents, my mother specifically, I don't want to go to college. I want to work in a steel mill. Well, the answer I got was we don't want to have on the air. There was no decision. I was going to college. So since I was decided I was going to go to college, well, I'll just take some classes, but I'm going to play sports. And I went to IUP at the time. And I went in the second semester because I had enough of money to pay the tuition, by the way, which is $300 a semester. Mm. So there you go, how things have changed there.
Huh. You're not even getting your books for $300, for the record.
you're not even getting a book for $300, for the record. But anyway, what happened was is I was going to play basketball, and it was in midseason. So I couldn't play that year, and I got into playing intramurals, and don't you know, I wound up busting up my knee badly. So the basketball career kind of ended at that point because, as a 5'10" guard in college, you know, even back then, you weren't big enough to be able to play that spot unless you were extremely quick, and I lost a lot of that. But anyway, make the long story short, I played baseball the whole 4 years in college, but I always wanted to coach basketball. And when I got my first job at Bellevue High School, there was an assistant basketball coaching job open. And by the way, to go back on that, the reason I went to college was for sports. It wasn't until my junior year in college that I decided to wake up or decide, you know, you got to become a big boy and you're going to have to be making a living now. And I met my wife, and it was time for me to get serious. But I still wanted to coach, and I got that opportunity, and I worked for Mr. Bruce Adams, who was a tremendous, tremendous influence in my life. I worked with him for maybe 10 or 12 years. before I got my first head coaching job, and it was at Northgate High School, and I was there for 4 years, and then I left and went to Shaler High School as an assistant again. And the reason I went there was my boys went to school there, and I wanted to coach them. So I worked as an assistant while they were in college, while they were in high school. And then my opportunity at Quaker Valley opened up. And I'll go without saying it's the best place I ever coached. The administration was, they were still interested in academics as well as athletics. I had an athletic director whose name was Ed Perry, who was the best athletic director I ever worked for. Ed gave you the impression he didn't know what was going on. Trust me, he knew everything that was going on before you knew it, and he was very supportive. I went to different places, and when I usually created some culture shock. I can remember when I went to Shaler, and they were really kind of soft. And we were at open gym, and I was watching them play pity pat. And I said, "Man, I got to put a stop to this." So I stopped it, and I said, "Hey, you guys," I said, "you know what? None of you are going to play." I said, "You're here working out. How about let's working out hard?" I said, "And quit this junk that we're watching as you're playing. So don't you know on the next play down, one of the kids goes up, gets a rebound, throws his elbow, and splits this kid's eye open." I said, "Okay, well, at least we got some action." Unfortunately, it happened to be the son of the president of the school board. So I said, "Well, there goes that job." But I called him on, you know, we called him, and I said, "Mr. Schofield," I says, "Ed had an accident here," I said, "playing." And I said, "He needs to go to the emergency room." And he said, "Okay, I'll be there to get him." So I picked it. He comes there, and he looked at it, and he said, "What happened?" He says, "I got an elbow in the head." And he looked at me, and he said, "It's about time." So, you know, I was difficult, for lack of a better word. I was difficult. But we had to create a culture that it's 100% in all the time. And if you weren't in, you couldn't stay. And that worked. Our kids worked very, very hard. Win, lose, or draw, when you played against us, you knew you were in for a war. And that's the way our kids played. And that's all I expected. When I went to Quaker Valley, they were kind of soft. And it took a year, or part of a year. I got the job. And they said, "We got this good coach that's coming down here. He's going to turn things around." Because now Quaker Valley has a great tradition for basketball, but they reached a point where they just weren't doing very well. And when I got into the job, you know, we started out slowly, but the kids were not buying in. And finally, around maybe the seventh game or so, because the superintendent talked to the AD, and he says, "I thought you said this guy was a good coach." And instead of Ed selling me out, he said, "You guys have been here for seven games. How about giving him a chance?" We got back to the point where we wound up winning, I think, 11 or 12 out of our last 13, and we made the playoffs. And our first round playoff game was against Still Rocks, and everybody knows how good Still Rocks is.
Oh, yeah. Tough.
And we had... We had a Swickley guy and Dan Marino Sr., who was an athletic guy, and the other guy was from Quaker Valley. His name was Don Ropa, and he was a big advocate of basketball there. We turned around and we beat Still Rocks by 15 in the first round of the playoffs, and Still Rocks was supposed to win the states. So at that point, we got better. The second year trust me when I tell you, I have no idea how many games I won. I have no idea. I do have an idea as many I lost because I made some bonehead calls. I never was a coach if you ask me what my win-loss record was, I don't know. And is it because it was bad? No, it wasn't bad. I just, the kids won games, you know, and the way they worked, they won the games. Then the next year, we were again very competitive. And then we had about a younger team going into the third year, and we struggled a little bit. But they were ready to come back the fourth year, and we had a great year. That's the year that we went as far as we did, and I can give you every minute of every play and how we lost the one game that we lost, and I still think about it, and that was in 1989. And then I got a call from Coach Mastriani, who was my first assistant at Quaker Valley. And Michael called me on the phone when I got the job, and he said, "Do you remember who I am?" And I remember who Michael was as a player at Quaker Valley when I was at Bellevue. And he said, "Could I interview for the job?" And I said to Michael, I said, "Okay, the interview's over. You're hired." And I hired him immediately, and that's probably the best move I made in my coaching career down at Quaker Valley, because Michael has taken over the program, and he's still outstanding. The year we won all those games, it was, this is how I decided to retire. God is my judge. We were at practice, and I found myself sitting down. In 30 years of coaching, I never sat down 1 minute. I was in their grill every second of every practice. And I looked and I said, "You know what, man, you're done." I said, "You have lost your edge. And I would rather people say, man, the guy should have retired 5 years ago, rather than say to me, he could have stayed five more years longer." And I ended my career there, and I wish I had started my career there. It was a great place for me to be.
Coach, you made a couple of comments I want to kind of pick up on. One, you said there was a point in college where you said, "Listen, I got to grow up, kind of put my big boy pants on." And then you talk about how you kind of, I don't want to say toughen them up old school, but you know, discipline was probably not much of an issue with teams you coached. Why is that such a struggle nowadays? Why does it seem like there's just too much, there's not enough discipline? It doesn't seem
okay.
Like it.
All right, I'll give you the words. A-A-U. Okay? And it should be A-A-me. All right? That's to me, is the biggest problem that's going on in high school sports today. Okay? The game now, if you go to AAU, all you got to do is just run, and the guy gets the most shots. The point guard gets all the ball the whole time, and the other four guys just stand around and run. People are paying for their kids to play AAU, and if you were invited to play on your skill set, that's one thing. Being paid, you're being there because your father paid $2,000 or whatever it is for you to be able to pay, you shouldn't be playing there. You know, we reward and have been rewarding mediocrity way too long. Kids have to earn what they get. And when you played for me, you had to earn it. You know, I can remember what the philosophy I had. If I saw the first, every drill we had, there was a first string, let's say, point guard, and a second string point guard. You could have a problem in that situation, but every drill, everything we did, I put the first string point guard against the second string point guard. After games were practice, they knew who was the better player of the two. If they were the same, I played them both the same. If one was better, I played the better one. Now, a parent might have gotten upset over the fact that, well, my son should be playing, but your son knows who was the better of the two. I followed that philosophy with every position. That first year I had a young man by the name of Joe Catula. Joe Catula was 6'7" tall, and he was a beast. He got cut in 10th grade or in 11th grade. He didn't play 1 minute. And then when he came there and I saw him, my God, I said, "Look at this." And he's, you know, I just started working with him on a drop step, which is a simple thing where you got your, on the block, you drop your foot, you put your body into the guy, and you make a layup. We did it on the left side. We did it on the right side. By the time this season was over, Joe was averaging 15, 16 points a game, and he went on to Allegheny College to play basketball for 4 years at Allegheny. Those are the kind of things that we did. We spent time with fundamentals. We spent time with toughening kids up. There was a point where after the first two or three games, he wasn't doing what he was supposed to do. His dad come up, "Mr. Coach, you promised me that you would treat Joe right." And I looked at him. I said, "Mr. Catula," I said, "why don't you let me do my job?" I said, "and when it's over, then you let me know whether I did or not." And now when it was over and Joe was doing what he was doing, he knew I did the right thing because Joe had to watch for a little bit to see what he was doing. And he was sitting right beside me. "Joe, watch this. Joe, watch that." And that's what I was saying. The basketball coaching is a teaching tool. You're teaching kids how to play basketball, but guess what? Not all of them are going to go to college. Not all of them are going to go to the pros. In fact, if you get one, you're okay. But you have to make them better people. And that's the venue where you can do that because it's you against another guy. It's you against another team. And when you get into society and you have your job, it's you against those people. And that was my whole mantra.
Well said, Coach. And before we talk about the Pittsburgh chapter of the Italian Hall of Fame, I have to ask your opinion on the NIL and college sports, or even high school sports.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And that's why, again, you go from the AAU to go to that. You're going to pay college kids to play. They're already on scholarship. Now, I do believe that they should be given some kind of a stipend, everybody. But this NIL, let's just take this for an example. The best player on your team gets paid. Now, the second best player on your team and the other three guys that are starting on there are not getting paid. Right away now, you have created a controversy that does not need to be created. Because if one's getting money, two wants to get money. So now you're going to create problems. Well, hell, we're not going to give one the ball. You know, and the whole philosophy changed. Same way with, I have my questions about the transfer portal in college. You know, you made a commitment to a school for 4 years. They're paying your education for 4 years. Unless it's extenuating circumstances, you've committed. Do we keep our commitments, or is it just easy? I'll just go to another school. Now, there are circumstances where a transfer might be necessary, but not carte blanche the way it is now.
Well, I would throw something else at you, too. You kind of hit on two big things. One is, I think gambling is ruining sports, and it's getting lower down the food. In other words, it's not just professional sports you can gamble on. So there's another thing that's definitely ruining sports. And I also think that, look, the reality is that these big schools are making insane amounts of money off these kids. And to your point, I don't think the kids should be given a stipend, but I do think they should be allowed to, like, for example, if they can get a promo selling their image for tennis shoes, the kid should be allowed to do that. It's his face. I get it, he's playing for the college, but it's his face. That's the one thing I did say, well, why can't this kid make money off his name? I get it. They're supposed to be amateurs. But look, the Olympics isn't amateurs anymore. There are no amateurs. Everybody, to your point, everybody wants paid. And the thing is, they want to rule that what I'll call that I'm a professional mindset to younger and younger children. Everybody it's just become about the money. It's all about the money.
I couldn't agree with that more. And when I see, you know, and I saw this, and I had kids that their parents were telling me, I can remember when they had the Round Ball Classic, and I had a young man on my team, and his father thought that he should play in the Round Ball game. And I said, I haven't gotten any feelers on him playing in the Round Ball game. Well, you know, my son is a Division I player. And I said, okay. I said, how about we do this? I said, how about you do me one favor? I said, watch a college game on Saturday, and then watch a pro game on Sunday. I said, well, when you come back, I want you to show me how many 5'10 kids are playing at major colleges and in the pros. I said, so if your son is a Division I player, they're going to find him. I said, did you ever hear Larry Bird's name? Yeah. Where does he? He lived in French Lick, Indiana. They had about 50 people, but they found him. And that's another problem. Parents do not, because of AAU, they don't have any reality as to where their kid falls as far as a basketball player. And they are not happy with the fact that the kid had a very successful high school career. That's not a priority anymore.
Right. Well, everybody wants to gravy train off their kids. They want their kid in the pros so they can stop working because they want to live off the kid. I mean, ultimately, isn't that what it comes down to? I mean, why else are they pushing these kids so hard into something? To your point, I coached hockey for decades, and the expectations were just ridiculous. It's like, and another thing to your point was, you know, if you're paying to play, nobody wants you. If you're that good, somebody's paying you. Even at a younger level, they're gonna sponsor you. They're gonna do things. Like in hockey, you got juniors. If you're paying to play, you're just not that good. Let's be very blunt.
Right.
If you're that good, you know the top tier junior programs are going. To your point, they're going to find you. They're going to find you in a tournament. They're going to find you, you know, in a high school championship game. They're going to find you at some kind of talent camp, an invite camp. They're going to find you. And then they're going to watch, and if you're that good, they're going to invite you. But if you have to pay to play, then you've kind of missed the point. You're just not that good. And I don't know what's going on with these parents, because I said for years, I don't think parents should be allowed to watch their kids play sports anymore, because you should be required to watch it either on closed caption TV or online, but they shouldn't be there live, because they're so just out of touch, and most of them never even played the game. That's the irony.
Exactly.
And yet they're going to tell you how to coach. They're going to tell you what you don't see little John, to your point. You know, I had hockey players, you know, in junior, it was tier three, which is basically just really good travel hockey, which is, you know, okay, depending on what level you're playing at. But it certainly wasn't, you know, top tier, you know, junior hockey. It wasn't college, not even close to NCAA college hockey. But these parents will get you like, why isn't my little Johnny playing? Why is he scratched? He's just not that good, you know, and you got to tell it to them. And they just, like, they don't want to face reality.
Exactly. And the other thing that's happening, you know, you were talking about the NIL. How about what's going on in high school? Kids are transferring schools in high school.
Yeah. Because they mimic, you know? They mimic. And if you don't think that these players that are older are role models or influencing them, people say, I don't want to be a role model. That's funny, but the kids are imitating you, whether you know it or whether you like it or not, or whether you would agree with it or not. Because to your point, how many kids would have known to transfer schools in high school until it became such a cool, big thing in the colleges? Now, that's all they talk about, transfer portal, transfer portal, transfer portal. 5 years ago, you never heard of this. But now, you know, it's getting insane.
Coach, finally, talk about the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame Pittsburgh chapter, how you got started, and where it's at now.
Well, you know, you're talking about Italian heritage, and that's what this whole conversation's about. And I got involved in the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame through Italian heritage. I got a call from Dan Marino Seniors. We're starting an organization to give scholarships to high school kids. You're on the board.
Oh. Congratulations.
We're having a meeting at Corky Koss' warehouse for the first meeting we had. And I met a wonderful gentleman by the name of Joe Emanuel. And I've met a lot of wonderful people in that organization, including that guy you're being interviewed by. And what we came down to is it was a honest-to-God organization. There was businessmen there, and Dan was the president. and he had his right-hand man, who was his chairman of the board, that if you Dan said something and you didn't agree with it, you had to deal with him. It was a very well-organized Italian organization, let's put it that way. And what we did, and why I was invited and other educators were invited, was for the educational part of it. We were to come up with some ground rules, some expectations of kids that would apply, making sure that the applications got to the high schools, because a lot of times you give them to the guidance counselors and they don't promote it, and make sure that the information comes back in, make sure that there's an honest evaluation of the students so that you can pick out the people that got scholarships. I have never belonged to a more honest and honorable organization. I can tell you unequivocally, no board member, no officer ever received one dime for doing what you're doing. I can remember when they were talking about the price of the banquet. I'm a school teacher, and they were saying $50 for the tickets. And I'm thinking, Jesus, I got to go up with 50. One of the board members got up and said, yeah, no. If it's not 100, I'm getting out of here. So it was $100 a ticket for you to go. I don't care if you were the president. I don't care if you were on the board. It was $100. All the money, every dime, goes to the scholarships for the kids. It was an organization. We had Italian traditions. After meetings were over, and Claudio, you never experienced this, but you have. I'm sorry, you have. They used to have a spread of food. And we used to eat together when it was over, which is an Italian tradition, sharing meals. It grew and grew and grew till we became, the original chapter was in Chicago. And the Pittsburgh chapter was right behind Chicago. We had, Dan Marino was the first president. When Dan passed away, there was Joe Natoli, who was he was the Morningside Bulldogs. If you ever heard of the Morningside Bulldogs, that was Joe Natoli. He coached football there. They never lost a game. He was president next after that. When Joe passed away, I became the next president for a term or two. I don't remember. And then the person that should have been president before me was Joe Emanuel, but Joe was ill. And then he came back and he became president after that. And now you're sitting beside the president of the organization, and well deserved. You have to be a different kind of dude when you become the president of that organization. You have a room full of Italians, all with an opinion, and you have to make sure that you keep things under control. And that's not an easy task. But we have given out, Claudia might know the number, at least $500,000 in scholarships.
Easy.
Money. Easy. We have been in existence for 38 years, and we are the only chapter left besides Chicago.
Wow. By the way, Joe Emanuel, where did he teach at?
Central Catholic.
That was my algebra teacher. I knew that name. He was a scout for Kansas City.
Kansas City Royals, yeah.
He's a scout for Kansas City. Joe's very ill. He's in a home now. He fights for his life every day. He's the most courageous man I have ever met.
He was a very
Steve,
nice
he
man.
Was with me in the same car for the Columbus Day Parade.
Oh,
yes.
My God, you should have told. Oh, I didn't think about that. Yeah, he was a very nice man. I remember him from high school. That was in the 80s.
Yeah, and he was he's a tough dude, man. That's the kind of people that we have in the organization. Everybody gives their time because they want to. For example, right now, we have a lady who's in charge of the education part of the organization, which is the most important part, by the way, and she's a home run. Joe Emanuel was the chairman of that organization. I was the chairman of the educational thing. This lady she's aces. And she comes up with the applications.
Donna
and the way
Saft.
We do it is, and she comes up with the applications. We get 100, maybe 75. I don't know how many we get. We get a bunch of them. She goes through every one of them. And when she gives the information to Claudio, who's on the committee, and I, and who's the football player on there, Claudio?
Well, it's
the other guy.
Me,
huh?
You.
Yes.
He's a new kid. It starts with a P.
Yeah.
The new guy. Yeah.
Should we edit this?
I know. I'm losing my mind.
I can't remember. But he was a Pitt football player,
yeah.
A very good one. But we get
Pickett?
Numbers.
I'm
wow.
Too soon?
way too soon. We get numbers. In other words, if there are 75 kids, we get the names are scratched off of the applications. So we do not know who we're voting for. And then we vote. We pick our top 10. Then we have one meeting together.
Pelosi.
John Pelosi. Yeah. And we go up and we discuss every kid. And we come up with our top five that are going to get scholarships. So then we find out who they are. So to give you an example, I was the head of the education department, the thing, and my niece applied for a scholarship. And when I went over them, she was by far number one as far as it's still the best one I ever did. It came time for us to vote. Claudia was one of them. And I said, I am not going to vote until the end. I have my reasons. She got the highest vote from everybody on the committee. So it made my job easy to say that my niece got a scholarship. So there's what I'm trying to emphasize is the integrity of the organization. And for that reason, I stay there every year. I'm even working for Florida because they'll mail my applications and I'll do them because I'm living a good life, man.
And you deserve it.
And I send mine in. We have our meeting, and we pick the kids. And every dollar goes to the scholarships.
Well, Coach, you know what? You know, I think the world of you. I appreciate you more than you know, and I consider you more than a friend. And again, I studied you, and to call you a friend now. Means the world to me. I met you 36 years ago, if you can believe that, at Quaker Valley when I started coaching. I was 23 years old, but it was a long time ago, but how grateful I am for you being in my life. So I appreciate it, and you've always had time for me, whether I needed advice or for a show or whatever. And again, I appreciate you very much.
Before I let you go, Claudia, I want you to understand something. This is the most important thing I want to say about this whole thing. I coached for 30 years. Every one of my contemporaries, guys that I coach with, guys that I love, are gone. They passed away. Right now, at this moment, I am in Florida with one of my former players and his wife. If you remember Jim Haslett,
sure,
that played for the Buffalo Bills, mm-hmm, his brother, John, is with me now. I know I did a good job, because I have touched the lives of so many kids. And when I had my 80th birthday party that my daughter-in-law had to have for me, there were 80 people, 25 of them were former players. And I couldn't ask for more.
Right.
I had a great career, and I knew people like Claudio. And I can close on that statement. It was the best 30 years of my life.
Well, Coach, again, thank you, and you have impacted a ton of people, as I said, with me, and I know you're still going to impact even more. So we'll be talking to you soon, and thanks for taking time to be on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right, Coach.
Steve, thank you very much.
You're welcome, and again, thank you very much. Appreciate the insight. Again, it's always great to talk to somebody who's, just gets it, and then, it's a breath of fresh air in this pretty – pretty dank world we're living in these days. So I appreciate your time, and you know, obviously, hope to have you on one day in the near future, and hopefully when you're back in Pittsburgh, we'll all get together, and like Claudio would say, we'll have the beverage of our choice.
There you go.
All right, guys. All right. Thank you again for joining us, and Claudio, as always, you have the last word.
Appreciate all of you tuning in, and as always, thank you, Mom and Pop.